This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tye.
And I'm Bonnie North. Good morning. Yesterday's installment of Precious Lives, our ongoing series on children and gun violence in Milwaukee, centered on the story of four people who had been in the crowd just feet from where 14-year-old Tariq Akbar was shot and killed following Milwaukee's Independence Day fireworks along the lakefront.
But the shooting touched more than the victim and those four people in the crowd. And the ways its impacts differ says a lot about the situation that has yielded Milwaukee's difficult summer of gun violence.
Precious Lives executive producer Brad Lichtenstein of 371 Productions sat down in the studio with a group of people, all of whom were within a few blocks radius of the shooting.
I'm Shateria Wiley, and I was directly across the street when the shooting took place.
I'm Megan Holbrook, and I live right 100 feet south of where the young boy was killed.
I'm Lisa Sadiopin, and I live across the street and a couple houses south of where the shooting occurred.
I'm Jared English, and I was approximately a block away at the intersection of North and Prospect, doing some legal observation for the ACLU.
My name is Josh Dalcoli, and I was probably three or four blocks away at the time. I only noticed the shooting happen once I saw a large amount of police vehicles moving towards the lake.
The shooting took place near where North Avenue meets the lakefront. It's a part of town whose residents are mainly white, but is within walking distance of where many African-American teenagers live. And many people say they saw racial dynamics at work, including differences in how authorities interacted with people in the crowd. Brad wanted to know how the guests view the mix of race and violence in Milwaukee.
We know that violence is a public health issue, and it occurs from systematic inequalities.
And I think to kind of follow up with that, you know, this is when you have a group of people who are in a similar socioeconomic situation, violence tends to be more prevalent in people who are poor and people, working class folks and working poor people in neighborhoods as such. And so, you know, if you look at FBI statistics and things like that, people do violence to people who they live near. And if you happen to live in a city where it's hyper-segregated as Milwaukee is, and you happen to live by lots of other poor and possibly traumatized because of other violence or other situation people, that's who you're going to lash out against. And just kind of like we were talking about before, it's like, well, if young people in that neighborhood, they typically don't belong there in the sense of their, you know, economic situation isn't the same, and so they can't even be there. And so on an economic scale, it tends to be, you know, if you've got opportunity, you got, you know, an ability to get a job, you know, don't have records and things holding you back, as almost 50% of all young black men in Milwaukee under 30 do, things tend to be a different kind of path. And so we need, you know, like I said, I think we need to be careful when we say, you know, relating color with violence. And it's not that at all. It's environment with violence.
Lisa is nodding over there.
I don't know if I can talk about this. It really upsets me that children are born into this kind of trauma. They see it acted upon their family members and the people around them, and they enact it upon the people around them as they grow up. And it's a lottery of birth. And I got lucky. I'm in this city. I'm white. I didn't see this growing up. And it's completely unjust. And I have no power to change it. I feel like it makes our city sick.
I think we have power to change it, and I think especially white people in Milwaukee have power to change it by paying attention to what's going on and talking about it with their friends, and, you know, being aware of our privilege and the access we have as being white. We have access to more political power, unfortunately, in this city than the majority of people of color. We live in a majority people of color city. The majority of politicians are white, and the majority of politicians, you know, are liberal Democrats, but we have a very neoliberal system that excludes lots of people of color.
I can Both of you have made a really great point, and it is about when all you see is the key to solving violence is using the gun. When that's all you see, then you think it's okay. And I can say I'm honestly blessed to say I grew up in a family where violence wasn't around. Violence wasn't a way to solve the problem. Our family, we have discussions about violence, but it wasn't something that was in my family. But when you look at but me as being Black, I would be looked at as, okay, I'm probably a violent person. But it's just...
You think people look at you that way?
Yeah, I think I have a lot of disadvantages because I'm African American. I'm thinking about bettering my community, but it's like when you're not really having your voice heard, or when you really don't have that, like when you really can't do much, then it's like, what much can be done?
I want to ask you, Shatiria, because you said and not have a voice. Do you feel like you don't have a voice?
No, to be honest, I really don't. But it's like I know I live in a community where a lot of violence takes place. But it's like to separate myself from that, I do a lot of community work, and I do try to help do a lot of things to help out the community. Like I'm in a youth led organization called Urban Underground, and I feel like when I'm with Urban Underground, my voice is being heard. Like I'm being able to do the things I like to do. But it's like, we can't really put that base and that foundation when we don't really have the accesses to make things happen.
Do either of you who live in that neighborhood, I'm curious, I mean, both of you feel very emotionally charged about the shooting and what happened. And, you know, you've connected a lot to the tragedy of it. Do you hear other kinds of talk around your neighborhood ever? Or does that feel like the consensus in your neighborhood?
I've heard a couple different opinions, and it has to do with restricting groups of youths from coming to the lakefront. It's been a couple sources, and
do people talk about it in terms of poverty or race or those people who want to restrict access to the lakefront? What do they say?
Do you have power?
Who do they want to keep from coming to the lakefront?
It's never specified. It's youths. It's referred to as youths, which I think is African Americans is what they mean, and they don't say.
Well, how does it make you feel when you're in the presence of that conversation?
It makes me frustrated. It makes me sick. And I know it's hard when it's your neighbors, you want to get along with them, but I want to tell them that they're with the assumptions that they're making. I don't want to be more specific than that. They're my neighbors.
The main thing, and I think to reiterate what Josh just said, is, and that's kind of just an attitude that's been prevalent in Milwaukee for a very long time, the fact that people, for whatever reason, believe they can't do anything. And that it even permeates our city leadership, I think. And I think there's enough fault to go on both sides and all sides of the political spectrum in the city where there's been failure. And, you know, we talk about the poverty situation. You know, we didn't have a state nor a city leadership that prepared Milwaukee for the deindustrialization of, you know, our area. There's a lot of people left in the lurch. But, you know, the thing is that it didn't just disappear. It's like this was obvious that this was going to happen and nobody did anything about it.
So do any of you think that there's leadership around ending violence or curbing, reducing violence in the city? I mean, I know there's lots of groups like Urban Underground that are addressing this problem. But do you feel like this is a city that has united around this problem?
Oh, not at all. And so this is why I say that. Yes, there are lots and lots of groups, but everybody's in their own little silo. You know, it's kind of like somebody falling off a building. If you want to have a net that's going to catch them, you got to, you know, it's got to be connected. It's not a net if it's not, you know, weaved together. And so we have all these anti-violence prevention things. We got, you know, marches. We got city initiatives. But nothing has an effect because I think, back to what Shatiria said, a lot of young people, and I'll say this from some previous work I've done in the community, a whole lot of people, I'd say 99% of young Black folks feel that they are absolutely disconnected from everything politically, economically and socially in this city.
What do you think would solve it? I mean, do you have a specific
thought? Well, it's not easy.
I wouldn't.
But it's just people being present. Folks don't even think about the other side of town in this city. And so you can have people who are, and vice versa. You can have a child who lives in the Imani neighborhood who's never seen the lake. Mm-hmm. And, you know, vice versa. You can have someone, you know, who lives on Prospect or Lake Drive. You know, it's like, you know, they watch the news and say, like, well, that's a shame. You know, all this horrible stuff going on. You know, that's their problem. No, this is our problem. What people are looking for is presence, and there is none. And so, you know, it's the old mantra. It's like, you know, divided we fall. And that's what Milwaukee is right now. You know,
had a 13-year-old boy. I mean, my boy, we're Jewish. My mm-hmm. boy just had his bar mitzvah. I mean, mm-hmm. he turned 13. And think about him getting shot in the back of the head and killed while watching fireworks or after fireworks.
It's horrifying.
What does it take to make this our problem?
I've always thought it was our problem, but it's, I don't know. What do you think, Megan?
I'm a little obsessed with this idea that we have a culture in the United States of guns that are seen as the solution for safety. You look at other countries in the world, they don't have anything close to our level of gun violence. Now,
but let's bring it back home to Milwaukee.
Sure. Yeah, like in our neighborhood, among people in the city, among, let's say, white people that you know in the city, what is your perception of, do people think it's our problem versus their problem?
Well, you know, I'm a member of the Downtown Rotary Club, and there are definitely people who are taking this as very seriously. And that's an organization that gets into the schools, gets into various efforts and tries to make a difference. And, you know, for instance, I was at the Brown Street Academy for what they call a done in a day project, where we were there for a fair and we were helping, you know, have kids have a good time, showing presence, being involved. Unfortunately, there was a shooting that afternoon. And one of the things that was troubling and telling was that I would say everyone who is African American knew exactly what that sound was and ran basically for cover. And there were a lot of people who don't hear gunfire very often kind of standing around going, was that gunfire? I thought that was gunfire. Is that gunfire? And I think that that's very telling, that there's an experience in the city, in certain areas of the city that are predominantly African American, where I think it is a form of warfare, a form of trauma. There's constant exposure to guns and gun violence. And I think that part of that comes from our culture of making guns easier to obtain than a driver's license.
What about you? What will make it our problem, not just their problem or your problem or my problem?
Just being able to open up more things for us to be able to do. Like, a lot of things are taken from us. And so a lot of people, far as like if it's money wise or other things, but a lot of people are not able to do the things that they want to express how they really feel, so they express them in different ways. So far as it being our problem, like coming together to like being able to help youth out with the things they need help with.
I think that's huge. I think increasing the budget of youth development programs like Urban Underground, like Pathfinders, like, you know, there's a myriad of really amazing youth development programs in the city that are work with youth who are in neighborhoods where there's a high level of trauma, that understand that trauma is a huge propellant force when it comes to more violence. Increasing the budget for those, and unfortunately, I don't know if that's going to happen in our state.
I think there needs to be a serious investment in the inner city in a way that's going to help the inner city, not just push it somewhere else. And so that's a whole nother discussion. But
in the sort of civic psychological sense, the our versus me and you or mm-hmm. us and them, how do we get to the our?
Well, the our is just, it's the basis of absolutely everything, what we're doing right now, communication. And so there's, like Josh said, there's lots of groups that do a great job of that. They could do more with more. But literally just people, heck, you know what? I live in Sherwood. I'm going to go and I'm going to volunteer. Let's, you know, help somebody in Harambe or, you know, Sherman Park have a Black Friday. Let's do whatever. Just straight up communication. And one of the things, like I said, that comes along with trauma is fear. It's like when you're traumatized, you know, when your neighborhood is like she said, like a constant war zone, basically, or at least in your mind, it might not even be that. Maybe an incident happened and it could have been, you know, one thing every 2 years in that specific neighborhood, but it's in your mind every day. When people cannot communicate with their own neighbors right next door, you know, across the street, that's when, you know, problems can fester. And so seriously, just like straight up people from wherever they are in Milwaukee, find the place they are absolutely least likely to go and go there and do something. That's literally it, the foundation of it.
Lisa?
I don't have a final thought, but I'm just wondering what you do for, how do you heal the trauma of growing up with violence? For a community, how do you do it?
Resources. Like where I worked at Pathfinders for 2 years, they had amazing programs to deal with young women who were victims of sexual violence. And it takes years of therapy for people to work through issues of trauma, whether it's sexual violence or physical violence. And there needs to be a huge investment into mental health resources and trauma resources.
And then, you know, just basic humanity. It's like, what do you need when you're hurt? Like when you've gone through, and it may not be the same kind of traumatic situation, but everybody's had something in some way that's hurt them deeply. And so what did it take, you know, just straight up emotional common sense. What did it take for you to recover from that? You know, everybody's, we might be different colors and all that, but we're all human beings. You know, the equation's not that much different.
Well, I was going to say that if you want the resources going to those neighborhoods, you basically have to reverse the course of what's happening politically. You're basically seeing the social safety net that was at least a little bit more interwoven become basically torn apart by politicians who are not interested in making people work together, but are interested in being divisive.
How do you make it ours, Shadiria? This problem.
Opening up more opportunities, letting people do the things they like to do. And just making, letting them, when they do the things they like to do, they feel like it's something they actually, like they're doing from the heart. Like not taking so much, because when you take so much, you're making them feel like they're nothing. So opening up opportunities will give them that insight that they could be something.
Great. Well, thank you all for talking about race and violence and economic well-being and our city. I appreciate it. And hopefully people all over the city will be having conversations like this as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Our panel spoke with Brad Lichtenstein, executive producer of Our Precious Lives series and head of 371 Productions. You can hear all of the installments in the Precious Lives series at WUWM.com.
We'll take a break now, and when we return, we'll learn about a conference exploring how people, wildlife, science, and public policy come together. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.